Collectively is a podcast series focused on exploring personal responses to the town of Eastbourne's art collection. This series approaches the nearly 100-year-old collection through a queer lens, feeling, tuning into, and selecting works that evoke memories, emotions, and experiences of queerness. My name is Renee Bourne Sutherland, and I'm an artist working with film and video, with a particular focus on bodies being carriers of narratives within landscapes, and the body itself being a site for transformation. Tanner invited me to connect with people from the LGBTQIA+ community living in East Sussex. After a number of sessions in the art store discussing artworks I had selected, each contributor was invited to choose works they would like to ponder and explore further. You can hear more from me, learn about the Towner and its collection in more detail, and how we sifted through 5,000 plus artworks in the first installment in this series. But in this episode, I discuss with Andrea, Figure on an Orange Background, 1961, by Brett Whiteley, and Interior with a Figure by Margaret Beneker, the date on which it was painted is unknown.
My name is Andrea Mindell. I live in a village in East Sussex called Rodmell. I work at the moment as an artist making embroideries to express how disgruntled I am with the world that we live in. I am oppressed by issues relating to gender, my race, social injustice, and how difficult it is to facilitate change in our world. I study embroidery at the Royal School of Needlework because I really want to do what I do in a way that will make it transcend time. And I am quite confident as well that the work that I make should last as long as the Bayeux tapestry. I have learnt the techniques. I would like to work much more in a collaborative way. So that's something that I'm definitely looking towards in the future, is working collaboratively rather than as an individual. I think for me, the essence of capitalism is me, the I culture. And so I'd much rather work as part of a group than, it's not so important for me. My ego is not so relevant anymore.
You chose a piece from the collection by an artist called Brett Whiteley, titled Figure on Orange, and it was painted in 1961. I'm wondering if you could describe the picture you've chosen. What does it look like?
Okay, so this is a rectangular work. It's quite big. I would say kind of half a meter long by maybe 350, 400 wide. It's a silk screen. It's not actually a painting. It's a silk screen. It's predominantly orange, but with a white area in the center of the picture. There is a horizon line that is about a quarter of the way from the top of the rectangle. He's used three colors, essentially white, black, and the orange. It depicts a cacophony of female forms. It's difficult to make out whether it's a single form or whether it's several female forms. And that's particularly why I chose this piece, because it blurs the line between abstract and representational, which is where I'm working on a series of pieces at the moment. So it echoes the work that I'm currently making.
Have you learned anything about the artist or the piece since selecting it?
I discovered that he is a renowned Australian painter, that he worked in London for a period of his life when he was in his 30s. And on his website, there is a video clip of him in London in the 60s. And it really is quite interesting because he speaks about coming to London and enjoying being an artist in London because there is a particular way of behaving or attitude that an artist can have in London and that he doesn't have to explain himself. And he likens this to being a homosexual in Australia, where you have to explain exactly exactly who you are, where you fit in within the social construct and social hierarchy. Whereas in London, he felt the freedom to express himself as an artist without having to constantly backtrack and explain his position in society. So that made me feel a little bit more relaxed with him, that he wasn't just a heterosexual man, you know, being an artist and expressing whatever he wanted to, that there was some social context that he was functioning within. He went on in this video clip to say that his generation after the war didn't feel, and I'm quoting, the discomfort of Hitler. And when he said this, I wanted to hit him because, you know, Hitler is not a discomfort to me as a Jew. It's an absolute fear. I grew up with this person in my psyche who was coming to get me. And so I wasn't so keen on his attitude towards the Second World War. I felt that particularly in the 60s, it was such a hedonistic period, in modern times that actually it distressed me a little bit.
I'm really keen to talk about why you were drawn to this piece. I was reflecting that we pulled out the rack and there was a big piece that we talked about at one end of the rack, and you very quietly went up and looked at the Brett Wiley piece and then stood back. And at the end of the session, you were like, oh, I want that piece that was on that rack at the bottom. And you hadn't at the time kind of highlighted it as something you wanted to explore, but you knew, and I loved the decisiveness of it. I loved that you knew immediately this was the thing that you wanted to choose to talk about. So can you talk about how you, one, narrowed down all the work we looked at to this specific piece and why you are drawn to it?
I was drawn to this piece because of the blurred line between abstract and realism. So it has an abstraction to me, but yet it's also speaking of the body. My work at the moment, I'm working on a series of embroideries in collaboration with a South African artist called Dean Hutton. So Dean Hutton calls themselves fat, queer, white, trans body. That is how they describe themselves. And that is what drew me to Dean in the first instance. I love the fact that they are beautifying their body, celebrating a body that is not perceived as something that most people aspire towards. What appealed to me about Dean's work is the courage that they display in their work. They get a lot of hassle on social media, and their bravery never fails to astound me. I'm in awe of how they approach really difficult subjects in the world. They're right on there with how I feel about the world at large. And I feel indebted to Dean. They're two or three generations younger than me. Dean celebrates the right of their body to exist in the world and other bodies to exist in the world and to be celebrated. And I think that's where I wanted to join in this celebration. So what I've done is I've taken a very old technique of embroidery that has religious connections as well as connections to royalty. It's the technique called gold work. I know that, for example, in a Jewish environment, going back to Egypt in the Bible, which, how much of it is true? How much do I believe? But anyway, the Jewish women and Jewish men used to do this gold work technique, and apparently they did it for the pharaohs in Egypt. They were trusted to work with these precious stones and precious metals. Then we kind of get to modern day, the Royal School of Needlework, and there's a company in London called Hand and Lock who supply the metal threads and badges, etc. And they've been going also since the 1600s. And this takes you right back to colonial times, to the slave trade, and yet they thrive. And they make pretty embroideries of flowers and complicated animals or animals that reflect royalty and religion. And so I've decided to take the goldwork technique and apply it to images of Dean's body. And that's where collaboration and the connection has formulated itself for me. So I'm really trying to make something really beautiful using these ancient old techniques, but subverting them because I'm taking something that they would not celebrate and I am celebrating it for them.
And how does that connect to the Brett Whiteley piece?
Well, it connects to the Brett Whiteley piece because I can't work out whether it's a single body, whether there is a sense of a body lying prostrate, there's a sense of a female body because there's two sets of breasts I make out here, although it could be bums and breasts, but it's the representation of the body and it not being a normative body. I have seen a lot of his work online and it is very heterosexual and heteronormative, and which I find unappealing personally. But this particular silk screen I can accept because it's not following the rule books, essentially. And so with this image of Dean's body, which is also floating in space, I see the work with their body in this piece expressed here.
For me, it's really interesting when I'm looking at it, because I think you're right. It is a body that's not normative. And it, the way that the body is laid out, because it feels like it's contorted, but it doesn't feel in pain or sexualized in any way. And I do see breasts, but I see bum cheeks.
Yes.
And there's an energy and a movement and a freedom to it, actually, even in the kind of little flicks off to the right of it. It's really, really lovely.
And a road, that there's also a centrality to the image and a sense of moving or coming away from a distance. I don't know, that the horizon line is interesting to me as well. It's kind of, it does speak of a journey for me.
I mean, we're both Antipodean. You are South African, I'm Australian. Brett Whiteley is Australian. It definitely feels Antipodean. It feels like outback. It feels like desert. It feels like landscape that's not rural country Britain in any way.
Yes.
And even the colours.
Yes, I think you're totally right there. And maybe that's why it spoke to me on an intuitive kind of level. I've been in England now for 35 years. But when I used to, in the early days, travel back to South Africa and you fly over England and you see this absolute patchwork quilt of fields and every single space is measured out and defined. And it took me a long time to get my head around that when you do come from a country that has an expanse of land and air and sky and sea. It's kind of, yes, there is definitely a kind of a freedom in this silk screen. I think it was interesting for me to also read that he was connected to Francis Bacon. I can see similarities between his paintings and Francis Bacon's paintings, where there is this kind of breakdown of form or detail into a kind of abstraction where you know that it is a face, but actually it's a face that's contorted and, you know, there is angst and anxiety in it. And Whiteley himself died a young death from heroin overdose.
And it really does, actually, now that you said the Francis Bacon, you can see that actually in this piece.
Yes.
And the body in movement and stages, but also in not that normative form.
Yes.
When I chose work from the collection, I thought about my practice, and I often think about bodies and bodies in landscapes and bodies being carriers of narratives, especially marginalized voices, where they're in tuning or being projected upon and carrying those narratives and then working through them and shattering them or adjusting them and creating these new narratives. And I often look at work or create work with a feminist queer lens. So I chose all the kind of pieces that I presented to everyone based on my feelings or experiences or emotional responses to them. And I wonder if there was any of that for you in relation to choosing this Brett Whiteley piece.
I think something that really spoke to me through this piece is that men paint women. I don't see women artists painting men or drawing men. It's like there's so much of Western art that is about men controlling the process, and the process is about women. So it took me back to John Berger in a sense last night and thinking about ways of seeing and how everything male dominated our world is men decide whether a woman has value or doesn't have value. I'm postmenopausal. I decided not to dye my hair. It's changed completely how people see me, and it hasn't changed how I see the world, but it's certainly changed attitudes towards me. So this piece spoke to me of, and especially that it is from the 60s, which was so domineering in terms of men had the freedom. And it just kind of speaks to me of the unfairness in the art world, that this is about a man taking a woman as a subject and imposing a set of values on her. He's creating the narrative, he's selling it to enrich himself. And so what happened? Who is this person in the painting? What happened to her? Sometimes you read about the women, the muses. I think in a sense, living in East Sussex, I'm very drawn to people like Lee Miller and Virginia Woolf, because they are women who somehow managed to step out of the mold. But then I also realize that they are women who come from a certain privileged element of society. So I'm not privileged. I'm not wealthy. So what would have happened to me, in those generations? So women either had to have money in order, in the past, in order to paint or to draw or to be an artist of any form, or otherwise they were subjects of an artist's work and never benefited from it other than being in that moment.
I think what's really interesting about what you're just talking about and thinking about your collaboration with Dean Hutton, in that you identify as non-binary.
Yes.
And you are working with someone who is trans.
Yes.
And their body. And it's collaborative back and forth process. You're both involved in the dialogue.
Yes.
There's no gaze. There's no objectification. There is a dialogue happening.
Yes.
About the work, in the creation of the work, and in the output of the work.
Yes.
And actually that's a huge, if we think about the 60s and everything you were just talking about, like where is this woman that is depicted in this Brett Whiteley image? We won't know. We'll probably never know. Mm. But the work that you're creating is actually, again, about conversation and collaboration, where you both are profiting. I mean that in terms of a creative way, not necessarily a monetary way.
We're doing it in a monetary way as well. We've formulated an agreement with one another, and we're working on a naming structure for the works. So the piece that I'm working on currently is called Venus in Repose, and it's Venus VXNXS in Repose by Dean Hutton, by Andrea Mendel. So we're putting both our names to the work, and we will split everything from any sale of the work completely. I'm actually working with a young photographer to photograph the work at the moment as well, and she will enter into that agreement as well. So if we sell any images of the photograph, it will then have her name added to it, and so we will progress. I really feel stymied in life by this capitalist system that we live in that isn't working. I spent 10 years of my life trying to find alternative ways of being through environmental movements. But then I came to a point in my life where I was stuck, and I didn't have enough of a society around me to help me or support me from being stuck. And so I've turned my back on a lot of what society is, and in the art world itself, coming at it from at my age, it's important to me to actually reshape it so that it works for me. I'm not trying to fit into it, but I do want my voice to be heard. I'm still finding my voice. It takes a very long time to make an embroidery. So, there's a lot of conceptual work that goes into it, and then the actual labor of making it. And it's not an easy process for me. So the work is very slow. I don't know whether I'll get to finish everything that I'd like to, but keep trying.
Thinking about collectively, and thinking about especially looking at the collection through a queer lens. So what I found when I was going through, and I find this anyway when I'm looking at work, especially work historically. So thinking in Britain, like the mid-60s, up until then, homosexuality was still illegal.
Yes.
Then we had Section 28.
Yes.
I'm always looking for codes and clues to the past. I found that in the collection, actually, pieces that I'd selected, there were codes, even though I couldn't define them. When I then went away and researched, the artist was queer or had come out retrospectively as queer through their diaries or their lovers, etc. And I wonder, when you were looking through the collection with all of us, Were you thinking about those things? Do you lean towards that, or are you conscious that happens when you're looking at work?
I think I'm in quite a strange space in all of that right now. I feel like I am post-sex, in a sense, post-sexuality. It's actually quite difficult to speak about. I think I was highly sexed when I was younger and couldn't ever imagine life without sex. But through hardship in the last kind of decade, 10 years, 15 years, I've walked away from it all. I've kind of almost left it behind. I've taught myself, and it's been a hard process. I feel like really the last 15 years particularly, I have sat in dark spaces on my own, whether that's real or in my head, to teach myself a different way of being much more self-reliant, in a sense. So I have always gravitated to the not normative. That's just been my way of being in life. So I think also for many years, my closest friends were gay men. And so from that point of view, I was always looking at the world for clues to what wasn't the main narrative. I think also growing up in South Africa, where racism was in your face and knowing that it wasn't right, and then having the Jewish narrative of we've escaped from Europe, we've escaped from the Holocaust, I don't feel like I've been on this normal trajectory. So I'm always looking for or attracted to what is different about things. I'm not so surprised by it anymore. The older I get, the more in depth you go. I have a son who is 21, and what I'm really enjoying about his generation is the sense of fluidity. And I think that is a saving grace for me, where you don't really have to be defined by anything. So on one level, I'm sitting in my head where I'm going LGBTQIA plus, and then I'm going fluid. Like, I can go where I want and I can do what I want, and judge me if you will, it's irrelevant because it feels okay to me. So that's the space that I'm trying to occupy now. I recognize that there is a fight. We need to look for that which isn't the normal narrative, so that we can kind of find our voices and stand proud in our own, or stand proud on our own. But honestly, the more that I see of life, it's the fluidity that really attracts me.
I talked about Derek Jarman in our sessions as well, and I am a massive fan. I have been for years. And
me too.
Like I said, he's my self-appointed godfather. But he talks about this in his diaries, and this is in the, you know, 90s, that actually we will arrive when we get to a point where fluidity is the main culture and it isn't something we even think about. It just is.
Yes.
And I totally agree. This current generation, it's just, so what? Yes. Everyone is finding space, you know, and that is obviously within certain parts of the world. That's not the whole world.
Yes.
But I wonder, it's really interesting what you're talking about is like finding, and then you said sitting in dark spaces, because you also identified a second piece, which is a dark space. I wonder if you could introduce that piece and why you were drawn to that and why it was important that you have two pieces, that it was hard not to narrow it down, because they're very different, these two pieces.
Yes.
A quick interjection to break with the interview. Andrea selected the Margaret Benecke Interior with a Figure painting literally minutes before we started this interview. She nor I had a chance to do any research or speak to the Towners Collections team. And as a result, we have on occasion mispronounced her name, referring to her as Margaret Benecke, when in fact her name is pronounced Margaret Benecke. Back to the interview.
The second piece by Margaret Benecke came to me last night when I was looking through some of the images from the session yesterday, because it was painted by a woman who died in the 60s, and it was painted, she used oil on canvas, and of all the other pieces that we'd seen yesterday, there were several pieces of artwork by women. Most of them were prints or drawings, but this was the only traditional piece of fine art painted by a woman who came from generations before me. And it really appealed to me because the actual narrative in the picture is of a woman on her own, on her knees, on the floor, in a dark space, with her shadow and light coming from a window. So she's in this womb-like interior, lost in her own thoughts, with her shadow, doing something very domestic. But there is an allusion to a world outside where there is sun and there's other stuff happening. Why I was drawn to that is really how I feel in terms of my mood, in terms of where I'm at in my life. I am very solitary and isolated. That's the life that I've chosen to live at the moment. That is my interior dialogue and my interior, and I'm not afraid of it. I'm not afraid of my shadow, and I'm not afraid of being in a space that is darkened entirely on my own. I think that at some point I do need to start reconnecting, and this is my first step towards reconnection, because we aren't islands. I do need the world and I need to be part of it. But it's also really important to be able to be on your own and to let things come through you and to work out how you feel about these things. And so I've taken the very middle class notion of embroidery, whereas this woman was sitting, it looked like with a pail of water, cleaning a floor or whatever, or doing her laundry. But while we reflect, we still need to occupy ourselves. And so these are the things that spoke to me.
They are really different. And it's quite interesting. I hadn't kind of clocked that Brett Whiteley's piece was painted in 61. And then this woman, Margaret Beneke, had passed in 1960. I'm not sure what exact date, but yeah, that changeover of time.
Yes.
Then it's this lovely narrative that starts bringing your thought process around those two pieces together.
Yes. I think also I was desperate to seek out a painting by a woman yesterday. It feels really important to me because, in a sense, I am kicking it back against the gay man narrative as well, because so much of my life has been spent around that, and almost it's easier in mainstream society to be a gay man. And in many ways, I mean, I think they've fashioned more of an inroad into society than women. I think it's been extremely difficult for us. I think carrying the weight of reproduction is a woman's lot. You know, no matter what your sexual orientation, there's a choice to be made if you're to have the physical capabilities. And I think that's something that totally kind of occupies me as well, because I have spent the last 21 years being a very solitary single parent, no family on either side. It has been me and my child. And honestly, I have been fighting the state and fighting society all the way through. When I left South Africa, I thought I was coming to a liberated Europe where equality was a thing. Feminism was a thing. I could stand up and do what I wanted and stand proud. Well, I got to the point where I found myself in the family courts and they beat me down, honestly, over a period of time. They take their time over these things. And I found the state was crashing. And honestly, I still cry about it. Every time I hear on the radio that this law relating to domestic violence has now been changed to this, I cry out of joy and I cry out of pain that I had to experience this and that this recourse wasn't available to me 20 years ago. And actually, talking of the painting of the woman in the solitary womb-like interior, I sit with so much of my pain through my societal journey that I need to sit with it all, because I'm not prepared to forgive and move on until there has been some change in attitude about it. And the law is one recourse, but then there are dialogues that one needs to have in the world. So, yes.
It's difficult. And all these things, homophobia, misogyny, classism, racism, sexism, they're undercurrents.
Yes.
And they underpin social constructs. So whilst there may be a veneer that things have changed, are changing, they're still there, they're still felt. And feeling it bubbling away under the surface, it brings up a rage which is really suppressed grief. And I think that's what you're talking about, is grieving these things that we experience, encounter in our lives.
Yes. I mean, I remember one day, I don't walk very easily, but in the village I live in, there was a fire one evening and 6 horses died in that fire. And I walked past the stable and I stood there with Leonard Cohen, Mea Culpa, coming out of my headphones, and I stood there and cried, and I 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 do a lot of crying now. I did a lot of crying when I was menopausal, and I also was a very visible menopausal woman. I was determined not to hide myself and become invisible. So honestly, the menopause wasn't easy for me. Some people have an easy time of it, but I was overcome with emotional distress, duress, nausea, migraine, things that are Freud would have loved, the hysterical woman. And honestly, I let it all out and I wasn't prepared. I didn't care to be judged by it. It was important to be seen and to be known and for this part of my life to be acknowledged. And so I still feel that, you know, I still live very much in that grief that you speak of. And I guess, you know, there is a lot of pain in life, and as we move through life, there's more of it.
And hopefully more understanding, especially as we spend time with oneself. It's what you're talking about, that inner work.
Yes.
Does help hopefully release some of that.
And I think to help all of us find ways of dealing with it, because we do have to deal with it. But I think one of the things that I really loved about lockdown is slow. We need to slow down our lives. And when you slow down your life, you can actually start to feel things properly. And it isn't just about moving on. It really is about sitting with feelings and emotions and working them out to let it filter through yourself so that you come out the other end and can be better when you go out into the world.
I'm wondering if you could narrow it down to 3 words, Brett Whiteley's piece, in what it means to you when you look at it. So it can be personal. You don't have to describe it in the literal sense. What would they be?
Now you've stumped me. 3 words. For me, this really says genderqueer. It's really one hyphenated word. Yes. And I think that's purely my response physically to the piece. It's nothing visual in my description.
Did that change, though, once you discovered who Brett Whiteley was and his history as a painter?
No, I've latched on to his video where he speaks of homosexuals in Australia having to not having the freedom to be who they are, having to explain themselves in society. And so I've kind of forgiven him for being a heterosexual man.
I mean, that in its own right is quite an interesting observation, isn't it, for a heterosexual man to make that statement?
Yes.
It's double-edged in a lot of ways as well.
Yes. I think he was really thinking out of the box. Obviously in Australia he must have had to think about his place in society and justify himself. Mm. And that's a very difficult thing to do when you're justifying yourself. I think as a white man it's easier to find things to hook onto to justify yourself. I think for us as women, there are more barriers to justifying yourself. I think that the fact that he was friends with Francis Bacon, so he obviously has sympathies, or he accepts a bigger world than the strictures of the 60s, of his time. I think in a sense also there was this notion that artists have a worldview. It isn't just about painting or drawing necessarily what you see. It is about breaking through and making observations about the world. So I think he certainly, I do get a sense of a bigger worldview from this piece. The fact that it is all broken down and it's not so representational in a sense.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, I grew up in Australia in the 80s and it was so macho then.
Yes.
So, and, you know, anything creative outside that very macho, you know, being an artist now, I imagine, because I don't live in Australia anymore, is also very difficult. It's probably not seen as a proper job.
Yes.
And I imagine in the 60s, even more so.
Yes. Yes. I think it's not seen as a proper job. Pretty much also in this country, in the Western world, you know, how many artists are actually earning a living from their practice? And it's so shrouded. These are the things that really upset me. These are the things that drive me to that dark place of Margaret Beneker's room, because it's like, I don't see why you need to perform or pretend. And I think kind of it's not an easy route being an artist, but I think at the same time, you have to address the difficult, otherwise you're wasting space. I mean, it is about making change, yes.
I have so loved chatting to you. You said you haven't formally studied art, but you are so knowledgeable in terms of styles, also a different artist. It's been such a joy listening to your thought process and your experiences and how they feed into the way you see the world and also your work and these collaborations that you're making. I'm really excited to see them. Is there anything you would like to add about the Brett Whiteley piece before we sign off?
No, I've had enough of him. Thank you.
And Margaret Beneker then?
Going away from this talk, I take her with me. As much as I was drawn to the Brett Whiteley and I can make connections to the work that I'm making, a deep sense of self connects with the Margaret Beneker piece, and it really expresses my state of mind more than anything. And right now, being a postmenopausal person, I feel much more connected to a state of mind than a state of body.
Thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank you. It's been amazing for me.
Thank you for listening. You can find out more about the Towner and the collection on their website, with selected artworks also available on Art UK's online database. You can find links in the episode notes. Collectively will be released fortnightly from November until early spring 2022. Subscribe to where you get your podcasts to stay up to date with new content drops and any additional bonus audio. And do sign up to Towner Eastbourne's newsletter via their website and on socials, follow at Towner Gallery. And spread the queer love. Do rate and review Collectively as it really helps other people find it.